Usually, when you look at buying something incredibly expensive, let's say a high-end sports car, the value is just all right there on the surface.
Right, it's completely transparent.
Yeah, you see the premium leather seats, you admire that flawless shiny paint job, you can just read the horsepower statistics right there on the window sticker.
Exactly. It's a total what you see is what you get situation.
Completely. And it's incredibly seductive, right? I mean, we are completely wired as humans to respond to that immediate, visible, shiny appeal.
We really are. The value is visible, it's immediate, and frankly, it is heavily marketed directly to your senses. You don't have to guess if the car is fast or luxurious. The physical object just screams it at you.
But then you step into the world of real estate. Specifically, you step into the arena of buying your very first home.
Oh, yeah. That's a whole different game.
Yeah, it really is. Suddenly, that what you see is what you get mentality. It becomes the absolute fastest way to lose a staggering amount of money. It is a complete paradigm shift.
Yeah, it's a huge shift. Because in real estate, the most valuable elements of a property are often entirely invisible to the untrained eye.
Right.
Meanwhile, the shiny, seductive features, the fresh paint, the perfectly staged furniture, those are usually just cheap distractions.
Distractions from what?
From terrible underlying math, they mask the real economic reality of the house.
And peeling back that distraction to find the real math is exactly what we are exploring today. So, welcome to today's deep dive.
Glad to be here.
If you are listening to this, whether you are gearing up to be a first-time home buyer, or maybe you're just a curious learner who loves understanding the mechanics of how large-scale financial systems actually work, you are in exactly the right place.
Absolutely.
Because today, our stack of sources is all centered around one incredibly powerful concept, and that is the future-proof home.
And we are taking a very specific strategic angle on this material today.
Yes, we are. Because if you look around online or talk to most real estate agents, the advice out there is painfully focused on the boring logistics of how to buy a house.
Yeah, it's all about getting pre-approved for a mortgage.
Right, signing endless paperwork, the escrow timeline, all that stuff. We are throwing all of that out today. This deep dive is a strategic guide on what to buy for long-term wealth building.
Which is absolutely crucial. Because buying a home, it shouldn't just be an emotional reaction to walking into an open house that smells like freshly baked cookies.
As nice as those cookies are.
Right, they are great, but it has to be a calculated strategic move. Our goal today is to arm you with the ability to look completely past the surface presentation and see a property's true underlying structural and economic potential.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because before we even look at a physical house, our sources make it very clear that you, the buyer, have to completely recalibrate your mental timeline.
You really do.
You cannot possibly know what to buy until you know how long you are buying it for. And this brings us right up against a massive cultural misconception, the absolute obsession with the two-year starter home.
Oh, the starter home. It's a fascinating and honestly an incredibly dangerous piece of modern financial mythology.
Yeah, dangerous. Really?
Yes. For decades, the narrative fed to young buyers has been this: buy a small, cheap starter home, live in it for maybe 2 years just to get your feet wet and stop renting, and then flip it to buy your real home.
Right, that's what everyone says.
But mathematically, in the modern real estate market, that 2-year timeline is a trap.
Wait, a trap.
Huh.
I mean, I hear financial advisors constantly talk about getting on the property ladder as fast as possible. Are the sources genuinely saying that buying a 2-year starter home is a mistake?
They are. The sources strongly advocate completely shifting your mindset away from a 2-year starter home. Instead, they say you should target what they call a 7-year bridge home.
Okay. What is the magic behind 7 years? Why does holding a property for 24 months bankrupt you, but holding it for 84 months builds wealth?
Well, it all comes down to a critical financial mechanism called the break-even point. And that point is driven by the massive friction of transaction costs.
Friction, like fees.
Exactly. When you buy a house and when you eventually sell that house, there are huge, often hidden fees. We're talking about loan origination fees, appraisal costs, inspection fees,
Title insurance.
right, title insurance, and eventually the seller's agent commissions. When you add all of this up, these transaction fees can easily consume 5 to 10% of the total value of the home.
Oh, wow. Which is a staggering amount of cash just vanishing into the ether of the transaction.
It really is.
So if I buy a $500,000 house, I might be losing 50 grand just for the privilege of moving the paperwork around.
Precisely. And this is why the 2-year timeline fails so spectacularly. For a real estate purchase to actually make financial sense, your home needs time to appreciate in value.
To grow in worth.
Right. It needs to grow just to cover those massive sunk transaction costs. In a 2-year window, it is highly unlikely your home's natural market appreciation will outpace that 5 to 10% deficit.
So you are essentially selling at a loss when you factor in the fees.
Exactly.
Okay, I want to try an analogy here because the math is really clicking for me now. Buying a 2-year starter home is basically like paying a $50 cover charge to get into an exclusive club, only to stay for a single drink and leave 15 minutes later.
That's a perfect way to put it.
The cover charge completely eats your entire budget before you even get to enjoy the night. You haven't gained anything, you've just paid for the right to walk through the door. Buying a 2-year starter home is like buying a cheap pair of shoes that wear out in a month, whereas a 7-year bridge home is investing in a good pair of boots.
That is a brilliant way to conceptualize it, the transaction cost or the cover charge. But it actually gets worse when you look at how mortgages are structured.
Oh, really?
Yeah. If we connect this to the bigger picture, we have to talk about amortization.
Ah, amortization. That is one of those incredibly dry financial terms that makes people's eyes glaze over. But it is basically the secret engine of banking, isn't it?
It is the engine of banking. And it heavily penalizes short-term owners. An amortization schedule is just the formula the bank uses to determine how your monthly mortgage payment is split.
Split between what?
Between paying off the actual principal, which is the money you borrowed, and paying the interest to the bank. And those schedules are heavily front-loaded.
Meaning you pay the interest first.
Exactly. In the first few years of a 30-year mortgage, roughly 70 to 80% of your monthly payment is purely interest.
Wait, 70 to 80%?
Yeah. It is just profit for the bank. You are essentially just renting money from the bank rather than renting an apartment from a landlord.
Wow. So for the first 2 years, I am barely chipping away at the actual debt. The equity I think I am building is just an illusion.
A total illusion.
I'm paying the cover charge to the real estate agents, and I'm paying pure interest to the bank, and then I sell. That is a financial mirage.
It is. But if you shift to a 7-year bridge home strategy, two things happen. First, you give the property enough time to naturally appreciate in the market.
Which wipes out that initial cover charge.
Exactly. And second, you push further down the amortization curve. By year 5, 6, and 7, a much larger chunk of your monthly payment is actually buying down the principal debt.
So you stop churning transaction fees.
Right, and you allow time and compound math to actually work in your favor.
So the 7-year bridge home actually bridges the gap between your current life and your long-term future while finally allowing the math to turn positive. That makes total sense.
It changes the whole game.
Okay, so we've established the timeline. We are holding for 7 years, but life is unpredictable. If year 7 or 8 arrives and the housing market is currently in a massive crash or interest rates are terrible, aren't we trapped?
Well, that's where the sources introduce a really interesting defensive strategy.
Right, because a strategic buyer never backs themselves into a corner where selling is their only option.
Exactly. The sources advise that every single first-time buyer must evaluate a property's potential as a future rental.
Even if they don't want to be landlords.
Yes. And to be clear, this applies even if you have absolutely zero desire to ever become a landlord.
So what does this all mean? It's wonderfully ironic. To be a smart, defensive, first-time buyer, you actually have to put on the analytical mindset of a future landlord before you even own your first couch.
It is ironic, but it's the ultimate insurance policy.
You are evaluating a house you intend to live in based on how someone else might rent it a decade from now.
Right. It engineers optionality into your life.
Yeah.
But this raises an important question. What exactly makes a house a good rental in your local market?
That's a good point. Because the quirky, unique features you might love to live with are often the exact things that make a house completely unrentable.
Precisely. Like you might absolutely love living in a remote, one-bedroom A-frame cabin halfway up a mountain.
Which sounds beautiful, honestly.
It does. But trying to find a stable, long-term tenant for that sounds like an absolute nightmare.
Oh, for sure. So what should we look for?
Institutional investors and smart landlords look for specific metrics that guarantee consistent demand and low turnover. The sources highlight 3 specific factors you must look at. First, proximity to jobs and economic hubs.
Okay, so being close to work.
Yeah. Renters typically prioritize convenience and short commute over almost everything else. If the house is near major employers, universities, or hospitals, the demand will always remain high, even in a recession.
That makes perfect sense. Renters are inherently more transient, so they want efficiency. What is the second factor?
The number of bedrooms. And specifically, the sources point toward 3 bedrooms as the sweet spot for a bridge home that becomes a rental.
Wait, really? 3 bedrooms?
Yeah.
I would have assumed a 1-bedroom or 2-bedroom condo would be the easiest thing to rent out to a young professional. Why 3 bedrooms?
It comes down to tenant turnover, which is basically the biggest killer of rental profits. A 1-bedroom unit has incredibly high turnover. People move in, they get a new job, they get a partner, they move out a year later. And every time they move, you lose a month of rent finding a new tenant. A 3-bedroom home, however, attracts families who want to stay anchored to a school district or maybe groups of established professionals.
Well, they stay longer.
Exactly. They stay for 3, 4, 5 years at a time. It dramatically stabilizes your income.
That is a fascinating insight into the psychology of renting. Okay, so proximity to jobs and 3 bedrooms, what's the third factor?
Low maintenance yards.
Oh, really?
Yeah. When you own the home and live there, you might love the idea of spending your weekends manicuring a massive, intricate half-acre garden with delicate water features.
Right, planting flowers, tending a vegetable patch.
Exactly. But a renter is absolutely not going to do that.
No, they're going to let the weeds grow waist-high, and that water feature will just turn into a mosquito breeding ground.
Exactly. From a landlord's perspective, a large, complex yard isn't a luxury amenity. It is a massive liability.
Because you either have to do it yourself or pay someone.
Right. It requires you to either hire expensive landscapers, which eats into your profit, or risk the property degrading. You want simple, durable, incredibly low-maintenance landscaping.
Okay. So by ensuring the house hits those 3 marks close to jobs, 3 bedrooms for stability, and a low-maintenance yard, you are buying yourself an exit strategy.
A bulletproof one.
If year 8 rolls around and the market is down, you don't panic sell at a loss. You just rent it out. It turns what is normally a highly stressful, rigid real estate purchase into a very flexible financial tool.
Exactly. You are insulating yourself against market volatility.
Okay, so we have our 7-year timeline. We have our rental exit strategy fallback plan. Now we actually have to go tour some physical properties. We're walking through the front doors of real estate listings.
The fun part.
Right. But this is where the sources get deep into the psychology of the buyer. Because to buy right, you have to learn to completely ignore the ugly, superficial stuff that is screaming for your attention and hyper-focus on what is permanent.
And this is perhaps the hardest discipline for a new buyer to master.
Because we're so visual.
Exactly. Human beings are incredibly visual creatures. We get distracted. So the sources outline what they call the 5 unchangeables.
The 5 unchangeables.
Yeah. These are the permanent, structural, and geographic realities of the property that no amount of money, renovation, or wishful thinking will ever be able to alter.
I want to really dig into these because I think people treat this like a casual checklist instead of a rigid set of rules. What are the 5 unchangeables and why are they so absolute?
Well, number 1 is location.
Classic real estate rule. Location, location, location.
Exactly. You can tear a house down to the studs and rebuild it, but you cannot pick up the plot of land and move it 3 streets over away from a noisy highway.
Right. Location dictates the absolute ceiling of the property's value. Okay, location is obvious. What is number 2?
Number 2 is lot slope. Is the land naturally flat or is it pitched at a steep angle?
Now, let me challenge this. If I'm not a gardener and I don't care about having a flat lawn to play football on, why should I care if the house is built on a steep hill? The views might even be better.
You should care because of water and gravity.
Oh, right.
A steep lot slope, particularly one that slopes downward toward the house, means that every time it rains, thousands of gallons of water are being directed straight into your foundation.
That sounds expensive.
It's incredibly expensive. This creates hydrostatic pressure, which inevitably leads to cracking, flooding, and massive structural failure.
Ouch.
Fixing a severe drainage issue on a steep lot can cost tens of thousands of dollars, and it often requires constant, ongoing mitigation. It is a permanent battle against nature.
Wow. Okay, so a bad slope means you are essentially buying a sinking ship. Got it. What is number 3?
Sun exposure. Which way does the house face and how does natural light hit the structure throughout the day?
I feel like people overlook this one all the time.
They do. But a house with poor sun exposure, maybe it's shattered by a hill or faces the wrong way, it will always feel dark, damp, and cold.
And you'll probably spend a fortune on heating.
Significantly more money on heating during the winter, yes. Plus, the lack of natural light has a profound, measurable negative impact on human mood and mental health.
And crucially, you can never, ever buy more sunlight. You can buy lamps, but you can't buy the sun.
Exactly. You can't change it.
That makes perfect sense. Okay, number four.
Floor height, or more specifically, the ceiling height and the foundational elevation.
But wait, people renovate and take out walls all the time on those home shows. Can't you just vault a ceiling if it feels too low?
Well, taking out a non-load-bearing wall is relatively cheap. But altering the floor height or the actual ceiling height of a structure involves the structural engineering of the roof trusses and the foundational slab.
So it's a massive project.
Huge. Raising ceilings often means literally unroofing the house and building the exterior walls higher. The engineering costs are so astronomical that it's practically impossible for a normal buyer.
So the ceiling height you buy is the ceiling height you keep. Period.
Period.
Okay, and the final, unchangeable.
Number five is the school district. The quality of the assigned public schools heavily dictates the long-term property value and its resilience during market downturns.
Now, let me push back here again, because I know a lot of young buyers who are staunchly child-free. If I'm absolutely certain I am never having kids, paying a premium to be in a top-tier school district feels like throwing money away. Why should I care?
I hear that argument all the time, honestly. But here's why that logic fails in real estate. You aren't buying the school district for yourself.
Who am I buying it for?
You are buying it for the next person who buys the house from you. Properties in top-tier school districts hold their value significantly better during economic crashes because the demand is inelastic.
Ah, because parents will always prioritize schools.
Exactly. Parents will always sacrifice to get their kids into good schools, regardless of the economy. Furthermore, strong school districts usually correlate with highly funded municipal services.
Meaning better roads, better emergency response, better local infrastructure.
Right. You get the halo effect of the good schools.
That is a brilliant point. So basically, I'm buying the underlying economics of the neighborhood, not the actual classroom. Okay, so those are the five unchangeables. Location, lot slope, sun exposure, floor height, and school district.
Got them all.
But I want to paint a scenario for you. Let's say you and I walk into a house. The location is pristine, the lot is perfectly flat, it's flooded with natural sunlight, it has 9-foot ceilings, and it's in a premium school district.
Sounds perfect so far.
It has all five unchangeables, but it has hideous neon green shag carpet from 1974. The walls are covered in peeling floral wallpaper, it smells faintly of mothballs, and the kitchen appliances look like they belong in a museum. My instinct, and I think the instinct of 99% of buyers, would be to run away immediately. It just feels overwhelmingly bad. Are the sources genuinely saying that this incredibly ugly house is actually the better buy compared to a beautifully staged, freshly painted home that happens to sit on a steep hill?
Without a doubt,
yeah.
Yes.
Really?
Yes. What's fascinating here is how our human psychology actively works against our financial best interests.
We just can't see past the ugly.
We can't. We get so easily exhausted by the idea of physical labor that we are distracted by shiny, temporary cosmetics. Buyers will gladly pay a $50,000 premium for a house just because an investor installed gray laminate flooring and painted the cabinets white.
But if that beautifully renovated house sits on a steep lot with bad sun exposure,
then you are buying a polished ticking time bomb.
We will gladly buy the sinking ship as long as the deck chairs look modern and stylish.
That is exactly what happens every single day in real estate. You have to train your eye to see the unchangeables. You can rip out neon green shag carpet over a long weekend for a few $100s.
You can paint wood paneling.
Right. But you can never change the slope of the earth.
That distinction is so powerful. Prioritize the unchangeables because they dictate the permanent reality of the land and the structure, which perfectly transitions us to the final major concept from the sources.
Right, the fixing up part.
Yes. So let's say I listen to you. I put on my strategic goggles and I buy the incredibly ugly house with the hideous green carpet because I secured perfect sun exposure and a flat lot. I've bought the ugly house with good bones.
Good choice.
Now, I actually have to fix it up. How do you, as a first-time buyer, know which fixes are a smart investment and which are going to turn into a financial nightmare?
This is where we have to establish a very hard line between cosmetic potential and structural liability.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because everybody watches those home renovation shows on TV where a charismatic host demolishes a house to the studs and rebuilds it in 30 minutes between commercial breaks.
Right, with upbeat music playing.
Exactly. It creates this very dangerous illusion that absolutely any problem is just a fun weekend DIY project away from being fixed. But let's be real. Cosmetic potential is a Saturday trip to the hardware store for some paint, new cabinet handles, and renting a carpet cleaner. Structural liability is needing to take out a second mortgage because the actual physical house is sinking into the earth.
That is a very accurate, if slightly terrifying, way to categorize it. The sources identify three specific major systems that represent immense financial risk for a buyer.
Okay, what are they?
These are the things you never want to, quote unquote, fix up. They are the HVAC system, meaning the heating, ventilation, and air conditioning infrastructure, the roof, and the foundation. These are your absolute structural liabilities.
Okay, so a cracked foundation or a collapsing roof isn't exactly a fun YouTube tutorial project you tackle on a Saturday afternoon with your friends.
Definitely not.
But why not? If I buy the house cheap enough, shouldn't I just fix the roof? Give me the why on this. Why is an ugly kitchen better to fix than a leaky roof? They both cost money.
It comes down to how value is perceived in the market and how certain repairs actually multiply your wealth versus just treading water. Let me give you an analogy. Imagine you are buying a used car.
Okay, used car.
When you buy a used car, you fundamentally expect it to drive. If the transmission is blown, the car is worthless. If you spend $4,000 putting a brand new transmission in that used car, you haven't made the car $4,000 more attractive to the next buyer.
Oh, because they already expected it to have a working transmission?
Exactly. You've just made it functional.
Yeah.
It reached the baseline expectation. A buyer won't pay extra just because you fixed what was critically broken.
Ah, I see. The baseline expectation of a house is that it keeps the rain out and the heat in.
Exactly. When future buyers or future renters walk into a house,
Right.
they expect the roof not to leak. They expect the heater to turn on.
Right.
If you spend $25,000 on a brand new roof and a new HVAC system, you haven't added $25,000 of new perceived value to the property. You just got it back to baseline. It is a sunk cost.
But cosmetic updates are different.
Completely different. Cosmetic updates directly and visibly increase the home's appreciation and its rental appeal.
How so?
Well, when you rip out the green carpet and put in fresh, clean flooring, or you paint the dark walls a bright white, a future buyer walks in, has an emotional reaction to the beauty, and is suddenly willing to pay a premium for it.
Because they can see it, it has a multiplier effect.
Exactly. You might spend $2,000 on paint and supplies, but it increases the perceived value of the home by $10,000.
That makes absolute sense. You want to invest your sweat equity, your physical time and energy into the things that give you a multiplier effect on your wealth. Paint, landscaping, simple light fixtures,
Yeah.
those multiply your investment.
Spot on.
Fixing a rotting foundation just violently drains your bank account to keep you at zero.
Precisely. You want to enthusiastically buy the cosmetic nightmare
Yeah.
because you get a massive discount on the purchase price up front, and you get all the upside of the appreciation when you do the easy fixes.
Right.
Conversely, you want to run far, far away from the beautifully painted, flawlessly staged house that is hiding a 25-year-old roof and a failing furnace.
This has been such a massive structural shift in perspective. If you are listening, let's just recap the strategic journey we've gone on today. First, you are going to completely ditch the 2-year starter home myth because the transaction fees, the cover charge and the front-loaded amortization math will just eat you alive.
Yep.
Instead, you are targeting a 7-year bridge home. Second, you are going to think like an institutional landlord before you ever buy, making sure your home has proximity to jobs, the stability of 3 bedrooms, and low yard maintenance, so you have a bulletproof rental exit strategy.
Exactly.
Third, you are going to ruthlessly prioritize the 5 unchangeables: location, lot slope, sun exposure, floor height, and school district, and ignore the superficial staging. And finally, you are going to enthusiastically embrace cosmetic sweat equity while running as fast as you can away from bad roofs, old HVACs, and cracked foundations.
And I really want to emphasize that if you take this strategic mathematical approach, it entirely removes the panic and the overwhelming emotion of the house hunt.
It takes the fear out of it.
It does. Information overload is replaced with a clear, highly objective checklist. You are no longer guessing based on what feels cute. You are calculating based on what builds wealth.
And before we go, I want to leave you with one final, slightly provocative thought to mull over. We've spent this entire deep dive talking about this 7-year bridge home strategy. But if you successfully apply all of this advice, if you manage to buy a structurally sound house with perfect unchangeables in a highly resilient economic location and you put in your own sweat equity to make it cosmetically beautiful, what happens if your perfect 7-year bridge home accidentally becomes so incredibly great that it turns into your forever home? How might that completely alter your lifelong financial trajectory, knowing you bought right the very first time?
That really is the ultimate win in real estate, isn't it? When the bridge you meticulously build is so strong and serves you so well, you realize you never actually need to cross it.
I love that. The bridge becomes the destination. So the next time you are scrolling through real estate listings late at night, don't be seduced by the shiny new paint job on the sports car. Look for the engine. Look for the unchangeables. Happy hunting out there, and we will catch you on the next deep dive.